Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limark Technical Net. It's been going on for 43-plus years. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we sit in front of our radios and inform each other, educate each other, and hopefully entertain each other. And I thank you all for returning once again this Sunday night at 8 p.m., when we'll try and do this all over again. So let me drop for a second, and then I will return with the usual links. Okay, if you would like to reach me via email, if you can't reach me on the radio, I will once again give you both addresses, just in case you would like to use the old one or the new one. You could either use mailbag@ac2gs.com, or the new one, which is roy@limarktech.net. That would be either for topics for discussion, questions or comments or what have you, that you couldn't make during the technical net because you couldn't get to the repeater, or if you would like to present a topic in the news or be part of a discussion of a topic or listen to a topic, that's also a good reason to email me. Also, if you have a TechNet puzzle, we're always looking for interesting, somewhat difficult to answer, but not requiring any math, technical puzzles to spur conversation. Also, if you want me to have Paul take a look at some NASA space-related story, you can either email me again at roy@limarktech.net. He has his own email address. It is spacenetreport@gmail.com, so you can also avail yourself of that. We have a link page where I cut and paste interesting articles I've seen over the week and put it on a page for anyone to share. Again, there are two ways of getting there. You can type in roy.ac2gs.com, or you can type in links.limarktech.net. We also have a chat room. It's been very quiet the last few months, but you never know. If you want to get to that, you type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, or you can also try chat.limarktech.net. We have an audio stream of the technical net. It's really an audio stream of the Glen Oaks repeater. I leave it on for the rest of the week, so if you're outside of radio range but have an internet service provider access, then you just type into your browser either technet.ac2gs.com or stream.limarktech.net, and that will give you an audio stream of the Glen Oaks repeater. And also I'd like to remind people that MyKC2NJI has a great archive site. It's at amateurradio.tv. It archives the technical net going as far back as September of 2006. That said, let me drop for a second, and I'll be back. Well, we will be doing the usual. I will be asking for any technical questions or topics or comments. I will hope that the first few are amateur radio-related. I would like to bunch up the amateur-related questions or comments at the top of the technical net and push the non-amateur radio questions to the second half of our little discussions here as best we can. I hope for that to take us into about 10:15. Paul WS2N will return with the SpaceNet report, and that should take us to 11 p.m., and I will return at that time to tie a bow on it and wish everyone well and call it a night. So that's the plans. If the laws of nature and science and all the electrical equipment behave the way they're supposed to. With that in mind, I will drop and ask anyone who has any questions or comments or topic for discussion to please check in, give me your first name and your call sign.
Hilo, Echo, Q, Alpha, Juliet, Uniform, I am Charlie.
Okay, I got something on my little audio indicator, but not in my ears, which meant that it wasn't linked to All-Star. I'm not quite sure. It could have been an automated message. If anyone made any comment, please try it again.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Good evening, Roy. Yeah, somebody by the name of Charlie checked in, but I missed the call. But, yeah, there was somebody that did make a transmission.
Okay, very good. I seem to have a little bit of a problem with my All Star connection. I'm getting out, but I'm not going in. So I'm going to cycle it one time and hope for the best, and we'll see what happens. Oh well, that didn't seem to take. So I can only. It's a bit of a kludge to listen to people, but we'll see how this goes. So, Charlie out there, if you're still around and you'd like to check in, please tell me again.
This is Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Juliet Uniform. I'm Charlie, and I'm going to listen as much as I can to Sunday night's show.
Okay, very good, Charlie. You just check it in to say hello, or do you have a question tonight?
No questions, but I learned so much by listening.
Okay, you broke the connection in the middle of that, but I got the sense. Once again, I continue to be AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is supposed to be the Limark Technical Net. So if anyone has any questions of a technical nature or topics for discussion or comments, please feel free to hit that push to talk and say your piece.
Boy, on a relay, all Charlie was saying is that he learned so much by listening. So that was the transmission. But yeah, I'm getting you and Charlie, you know, everything is 100% here, so it must be the All-Star on your end. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, it's sort of a shame. I mean, it's doable. Let me kill the program and then summon it again and try one more time. It'll mean a little bit of a pause, but I don't think it's going to put that much of a pause on tonight's net. So let's see if I can trick it into actually working. Okay. I gave it the good old college try, but I still don't hear it in my headphones, which is where I'm supposed to. So I'll just keep clicking the buttons back and forth and back and forth, and that won't be very distracting. Anyway, once again, I continue to be AC2GS. This continues to be the Limark Tactical Net. So if anyone out there has any questions or comments or topic for discussion, please feel free to hit that push-to-talk button and say your piece, because this, unfortunately, is not a monologue on my part. It's a dialogue. So, all things being equal, if you're out there and so inclined, please give me a question or a comment.
AD2VHD, Jim.
Okay, Jim recognized. Anyone else out there who would like to put their name on the list for tonight?
Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Whiskey X-Ray.
Okay, very good. Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Whiskey X-Ray. We got you down in the number 2 slot. Anyone else want to put their name early on the list tonight? Okay. Well, I guess you're up first, Jim. What's your question or your topic for tonight?
So I have a continuation of my Order 1 Ballon saga. I ordered an interesting thing that I found, but I fear it's a piece of junk. I wanted to throw out the specs on it and see if anybody had any experience with such a thing. I ordered it on Amazon. The brand is Sarau, S-A-R-A-U brand. 1 volt, 1 to 4. HF dipole antenna ballon, waterproof 50-watt transformer. It's a little widget thing, a little PC board with a BNC connector, a small toroid wrap, and a couple connectors for dipole wires. Electrically, it's just what I wanted. Mechanically, it's great because it's small and light and portable, but I fear it's a piece of junk. Anybody have any input on it?
Okay, I'm interested to see if anyone has any opinions. In my humble opinion, you kind of made two mistakes there. One is to buy your amateur radio gear at Amazon. They're a great vendor. We've talked about them in the past, but they really do not judge anything. If you decided you wanted to sell some 4-to-1 balance, they would be more than happy to give you a space on their market site. So there's no curating whatsoever, and the brand name means nothing to me and I think to anyone else. It's most likely just a cheap Chinese ripoff. It might be good quality. It might be terrible quality. By next Wednesday, they'll probably change the brand to something slightly different and just as generic. So, you know, if it works, great. If it doesn't, I hope it didn't cost you much. Or some of our more gung-ho Amazon users would tell you to, you know, get your money back, and they probably can do that. But when I buy balance, I buy them at places that have a reputation for making balance, and I usually get them a little bit bigger and bulkier just in case, because you never know when someone's somewhat underrating the wattage. But if anyone out there has any recollections of dealing with this Chinese brand, I assume it's Chinese, then please hit that push to talk.
I'll throw some clarifying comments.
Well, as I feared, Jim, we're not getting any response. Again, I'm, you know, it's difficult to say. You know, sometimes early in the net, people are a little reticent to respond, but again, my guess would be that this is a relatively unknown brand, and probably not too many people knowingly have had any experience with it. So I wish people could help you directly. You know, the reviews are somewhat useful. In the case of Chinese products, I often don't take them seriously because I've had more than a few packages coming in from China with the little cards that say, you know, we'll give you 10% back on the purchase price if you go to Amazon and write a 5-star review for us. So, you know, they're not terribly legit, but I don't know. It sort of depends on how you want to play this. I certainly hope you don't plan on using it for any transmitter that's capable of a full 50 watts, because I'd be willing to bet that it would probably burn out at 20 or 30 watts. But if you're going to keep it at QRP or so, it might be a keeper.
Well, I plan on using it as a 10-watt QRP setup, portable, and I fully intend on wanting a full-size one for my QRO 100-watt rig. But it seems so neat and tidy and small and light and whatnot, and it is pure Chinesium. Pure Chinesium, but it is truly a ham radio experiment, and it's $14, whatever. But I was curious if anybody had had any insight or traveled this road before. But thank you for putting it out there, Ray.
Well, you're always welcome here, and you're a big participator. I do appreciate it. And I wish you luck with it. You know, as long as you keep the power ratings low, there's a good chance that it will be quite usable. I don't know if it's waterproof, so you might want to consider the possibility of spending a little bit more money kind of covering it in something so that the first time it gets wet, it doesn't short itself out. But otherwise, you know, you never know. Occasionally, these Chinese products, you know, are worth it. You know, are they worth $14? I guess so. You're certainly not going to get a 4-to-1 Balin made in the United States for $14. I think the cheapest one I've seen is about $60 or $70. So, you know, have fun, enjoy, and feel free to come back and tell us all how it went.
Well, hopefully I'll talk to you on HF with it, and I'll let you know right there. We'll see what happens. It's interesting. This one approaches the waterproof on a different method. Rather than having a big clunky box that usually lets more water in and less out and becomes a reservoir, it just is naked, completely open to the air, so water just kind of flows through, as it were. I kind of like the idea. Is it going to work? I don't know. Like I said, it's a $14 experiment. I'll just have to watch the SWR and not make it more expensive experiment than that.
Okay. I mean, that's an interesting philosophy on weatherproofing. Just let the water just kind of beat up and then drip off the other side. So I wish you good luck as always, Jim, and I hope to be able to talk to you on HF. I don't know if you're aiming towards 10 meters much. I was on the 10-meter net this morning. I used to do it almost every week until the radio broke, and I got it back, and I turned it on, and now I'm back on 10 meters. And unfortunately, it was the case of water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. It was the CQDX contest, and the whole band was jumping with people making serial contacts with other stations, and none of them really wanted to rag chew with a net, so none of them came by and said hello. It was just me and another guy for an hour, and one or two guys passed by to just say hello. So maybe one of these days you'll be one of the guys who at least passes by to say hello.
That's my plan. It was funny, I was having a conversation with the GMRS world, and the comparison going on between the differences between ham and GMRS. And I happened to say, just out of the blue, made the comment of, ham radio is a bunch of people talking about talking. And we had a chuckle about that. And that's kind of sounds like what you were experiencing. I myself enjoy the content. So I'll let you go on to the next person. Thanks, Roy.
Okay, very good, Jim. Next on our voluminous list is KE2AWX. I believe that's Charles. So, Charles, what's your question or topic or comment for tonight?
KE2AWX. Good evening, Roy and Annette. My question tonight is, I'm looking into making a little all-star link at the house. I know I can do it off the computer, but I'd prefer to do a low power, you know, a little box so I can walk around with, like, my 1-watt HT and really not get out too far with it. But, I'm looking into some options. A couple of friends have some boxes that they connect to, you know, like a Motorola mobile, sort of a high power link. I'm looking for a nice little low power for around the house. Looking for suggestions on which way to go with that.
Okay. It kind of amounts to how much of a do-it-yourselfer you are and how much money you feel like paying. I used to kind of like to do things myself, but I find it takes up way too much time, and there's always little bits and pieces that have to be figured out and corrected, even if you pay ahead of time. So when I was interested in All-Star, I got something called ClearNode, which is a very nice little machine. It's, I think, based on a Raspberry Pi 4B. It's capable of all kinds of nice things. In addition to acting as a generic All-Star link, it's capable to a degree of acting as a regular hotspot, so you can use DMR, you could use Fusion, you could use, you can't really use D-Star, because it does have an AMBI chip. The way that the digital modes tend to work other than All-Star is they use a compression chip called from AMBI Corporation, and there are two types. One type works with DMR and D-Star and DMR and Fusion. The other one works with D-Star. But you can use a plug-in to the USB to do the D-Star part. So I can communicate on D-Star, some DMR gateways, some Fusion gateways, and all of the All-Star gateways. And it's a very nice package. It's maintained by the company, and they send up updates to the firmware and improve little bits and pieces of it. But you can go much less expensive. You can just Google All-Star nodes, and there are far less expensive options out there, some of which require you to do a little surgery on a handy talkie. This Clear Dough that I have is a pure kind of hotspot repeater type. It operates. You can get one for UHF, but you can get one for VHF, and off of a handy talkie, do whatever you need to do. So there's a lot of different ways of doing All-Star. I don't think you could just kind of build it out of nothing, but you can get bits and pieces and cobble something together. Depends upon how industrious you feel like being.
Okay, yeah, I'm sort of familiar with the Clear Note. I came across them before I ended up doing a Raspberry Pi hotspot that I, you know, building off of that. Is there a sort of hat that I could get that would allow me to do FM on that? I know the Clear Note allows you to go in with FM. I'm fairly familiar with building the hotspot. I have a bunch of the Raspberry Pi Zeros and 2Ws laying around. So I would like to do something with that if possible. But I really haven't found much information on being able to get a board that would allow that on top of the Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, not surprisingly, neither was I. I was looking into it. There's no literature that I could find that simply takes it from a Raspberry Pi and, say, a Baofeng to, you know, well I mean, the problem is that a lot of the designs that didn't have a top hat that offered the RF interface used something like some wires going into a Baofeng or some other relatively inexpensive handy talkie to accomplish it. So my gut feeling is that there's nothing readily available that you could just stick on the pins of a Raspberry Pi in the same way that a Pi Star can be operated. I don't know why. You'd think that it would kind of be similar. It's just the software that would be different. But for whatever reason, I was not able to find any information on that either.
All right. Yeah, that's what I thought. I spent some hours browsing around looking for different options. Did find one interesting one, and a friend of mine actually had the device, so I've been playing around with that a little bit. Notice it gets some range out of it, a little further than I would like, but that was the R4. That might end up being the route that I was just seeing if there was a lower price range. Very much for the information. Back to looking around then.
Okay, very good, Charles. I'm a little wondering what you meant by this one goes out too far. Were you talking about expense, or were you talking about the output range of the transmitter?
I was talking about the output range, not expense. You know, like I said, I'm trying to keep it really low power around the house. I don't really want to go out really far with it. I'm not looking to use it away. I noticed I can get, you know, close to an eighth mile on that. That little box, it seems like. It claims to only be putting out about 10 milliwatts, but I would think it's putting out a little bit more than that if it's only working off like a little HT antenna on that.
Okay, you know, you could always put some kind of a attenuator, a little resistor in its path. You know, it's far easier to attenuate a signal than it is to amplify it.
All right. Yeah, I'll have to come up with a little something for that then. That box is only about $100, so it looks like that might be the way to go with this then. Thank you very much for the information again.
Okay, very good. Thank you for participating tonight on the Limark Technical Net. Once again, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Limark Technical Net. And we got lots and lots of time out there, so hopefully there'll be people with either questions or comments or topics for discussion. So if there's anything out there, please hit that push-to-talk button and ID yourself, and we'll discuss it. Yes, Jim.
I was just searching around and realized what I had ordered is a knockoff of a QRP guy's selling. Twice as much for a kit, but probably better quality. I suppose my question is restated under that umbrella of the QRP Guys American kit for a old portable ballot.
Okay, I mean, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. It depends how well the Chinese factory cloned the design. There's nothing really that particularly gee whiz about a 4-to-1 Valen. They're all over the place. So it's kind of difficult to get it wrong, but Chinese manufacturers have been known to cut all manner of quarters. They have a phrase for doing stuff the poorest quality that just sort of works sometimes. I was watching a YouTube recently where there was apparently a CO2 detector box, and the guy took it apart and realized that apparently it cost too much money to actually put a CO2 sensor in the CO2 sensor's box. So they swapped it out for an alcohol detector, which is not the same as a CO2 detector, obviously. And, you know, China tends to do these things, unfortunately. Occasionally, they will bulk up a baby formula with filler that's slightly poisoning. So, but I don't think you have anything particularly to fear. It's either just not going to work, or if it does work, it certainly wouldn't work for 50 whole watts. But as long as you keep it at 10 watts, you might get away with it. A little concerned that it's kind of open, so don't operate it when it's about to rain, because that's not going to turn out well either. But, you know, a $14 experiment. What can you do?
Yeah, I actually, absolutely. I'll probably order this real one, the kit, QRP guys. But for $14, I'm like, I might as well just buy the thing. But I didn't know it was a copy of this one. Just for the principle of it, I'll probably buy this one also. And I think the idea behind it all being open is the fact that your antenna is open. If the thing, I don't know. Curious about this, but it's meant to be a portable, put it up, take it down type of thing. I'll give it a whirl.
Okay, I mean, I think the thought behind it was the least price, it was less expensive, less complicated, easier to get it out of the factory faster for less labor time. And you know, if you're going to use it kind of portable, chances are you're not going to be hanging out in the rain either, so you could make a case for a lower-cost product that isn't waterproof that will probably not be used in the rain. So it has an internal logic of its own, but, you know, again, I don't stay completely away from Chinese stuff. I just have a different attitude towards it. If something catches my fancy and is inexpensive, and if it doesn't work, it won't ruin my day, and I feel lucky, I spin the wheel. If it was something that I needed for reliability, if I was going to mount it up on the roof, it's very difficult to get to, and I absolutely positively don't want it to burn out, I don't think I would get it from China. But if you're going to use it walking around and such, and it costs you $14 and you want to see if you're lucky, then that's great.
Agreed on all those principles. Thank you. Back to that.
Okay, very good. Thank you once again, Jim. Again, I'm AC2GS. This is the Weimar Technical Met. And if anyone has any questions or comments or topics for discussion, please hit that push-to-talk button and ID yourself. Oh, well, nothing heard, although Ken is in the chat room. Hello, Ken. Actually, there are people out there who are interested in detectors for CO2. If you have poor ventilation and a lot of people milling about a highly insulated environment, it's not uncommon for the CO2 levels to rise and that, you know, most times it won't suffocate you, but it will kind of make you feel tired and run down, a little short of breath, what have you. CO is very dangerous. Anyone who has any kind of gas-powered devices, if you have a boiler, if you use your gas range a lot, it's always good to have a CO detector. Carbon monoxide is a odorless, poisonous gas. It can kill people. You need a lot of CO2 to kill you. Every so often there are stories in the press about some idiot who fell asleep on, usually it's their dorm floor, with a brick of dry ice sitting next to them. What happens is the carbon dioxide is heavier than oxygen, and it displaces the oxygen, and the poor schlep actually runs out of air and dies. So you're right that CO is probably a lot more important, but there's a lot of room air quality detectors out there that include a CO2 detector. What's funny, they can mention that who wants a Celsa detector, one of the ways that the guy on YouTube demonstrated that it wasn't a CO2 detector was he had one of those carbonating machines that I used to have it when I was a kid, but they've gotten a lot fancier. You would, pour some water into a canister, and you had these little CO2 cartridges. You put it in the handle, screw it down. It would get pierced by a needle. The CO2 would then carbonate the water and make it seltzer. So this guy actually, I think it's a slipstream or something. It's basically the same premise, and he sprayed CO2 into the detector, and it didn't move in the slightest. Then he had a little sip of wine and breathed into it, and it went crazy. So it was sort of meant for a breathalyzer. I guess in China, there's a lot of breathalyzer sensors that are not being sold. So they figured that they just put it in the carbon dioxide detector, and people wouldn't kind of notice because it would fluctuate, and they never quite knew, you know, whether it was real or just measuring some other random nonsense. Again, the Chinese in action. You got to watch them every so often. They will kind of try and cheat you at times. Well, you know, we could all chat about things that are going on in the chat room, but I think the people sitting around their radio, assuming there are people sitting around their radio, would be more interested in conversing back and forth. So if you're sitting there in front of your radio, you got either a question or a topic for discussion or a comment to be made, please feel free to make it. Well, we certainly are having a slow night. And the fact that I have to keep pressing buttons back and forth every time, well, more than one. I'm more than happy to press one button to talk. You know, in the old days, it was just the trigger button for the radio. But with this All-Star system, it's a slightly different thing. I have to keep in mind where the cursor is pointed on my computer and all kinds of fun stuff. So now, not only do I have to make sure the cursor's pointing and push the right button, but I have to push another button on the other time so that I can hear anyone, because the All-Star is only going in, not going out. Anyway, enough of my problems. I don't know what to tell you guys. If you got any comments, if you have any questions, if you have any topics for discussion, please feel free to bring them up here on the Limark Technical Method.
K2WOT.
Say again, please.
KD2WOT. Good evening.
Oh, okay. Hi, Chris. How are you tonight? Do you have a question or a topic for us here?
Well, I was wondering if you had gotten your radio back yet.
Yes, indeed. I mentioned at the top of the net that I was on 10 meters this morning. There was a CQDX contest across all the bands. 10 meters was jumping all over the place. I was barely able to find a couple of kilocycles to call my own, but unfortunately the contesters were interested in contesting, and so it was me and Howard KD2MSU. A few people kind of passed by to say hello and then goodbye, but they were few and far between. But yes, I thankfully got back my my Flex Radio 6700 last week, and I was on the 10 meter net last Sunday and this Sunday. It just required fan maintenance. As I've mentioned before, the Flex Radio is lovely radio. I enjoy using it a great deal. It is, though, about 85% computer and 15% radio. So, like most computers, especially after 10 years, the only mechanical part are the fans, and they start to go. So I needed at least two of my four fans replaced, and I felt it was a reasonably good idea to get all of them replaced. I didn't want the others to fail in a couple years. So it's a little bit more quiet than it was when it left me here, but it's working beautifully. Thanks for asking.
Well, that's great news. Unfortunately, I've been off the air with my HF. My antenna was damaged.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you know, I mentioned the weak spot for my radio is the fans, because they're mechanical. The weak spot for pretty much all of us amateurs is the darn antenna, because we need to expose it to the outside environment. There's all kinds of things going on, and gravity being what it is, inevitably antennas fall down. I'm down to my last three. I have UHF, VHF vertical that I used to use for this repeater when this repeater was able to hear me. I have a Yagi that's a VHF that I use for another repeater, and I have my Serio 10 meter 5/8 wave vertical. Thankfully, it's been knocked down in the past, but I was able to get it back up. My main fan dipole is a thing of the past. What are these centuries? I'm going to have to try and figure out how to get that replaced, because I'd like to have the ability to go past 10 meters. But, yeah, it's unfortunate. I wish you luck with getting an antenna put back up there. You know, in the old days, I was told it was a lot like putting up a new barn. You just kind of call out, and everyone comes by to help you. Now, you know, everyone's busy taking their arthritis pills, and, you know, they're not really up to it, or at least you can't really get much help. I've been trying to see if we could arrange for a kind of general committee of people might help. I've been trying to bring younger people into the hobby who are much more spry than I am. It's not quite clicking yet, but hopefully one of these days.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. Unfortunately, mine met its demise in a kind of a unique fashion. Don't know if you recall, but I was using a long wire, approximately 100 feet, stretched partially over a body of water. And fishermen, apparently, casting, had snagged the wire. And he pulled and pulled and pulled until he broke my antenna.
Oh, that's awful. I'm sorry to hear that. Yes, usually, thankfully, nature is the cause for most of my antenna problems, at least. I know of one unfortunate gentleman who repeatedly tells me that his neighbors sabotage his antennas every chance that they get, and that's kind of awful. You know, having fishermen kind of fish your antenna to the grave, that's not good either. I don't know. It's difficult. I wish that antenna technology had taken off as much as electronics and semiconductors and computer electronics has taken off, but it's still wires hung in the sky someplace or other. And like I said before, gravity isn't going to change much in the next few billion years, so inevitably everything falls down. But I hope you're able to get something back up into the sky, and I hope to hear you again on the 10-meter net.
We'll probably be working on something the next couple of weeks, and hopefully get back on. I have heard that 10 meters has been doing well again. We had a good period, back in, April, May, and then it seemed to take a dive over the summer, but I understand it's back, so that would be good.
Yeah, I am happy to report that it's back. I was very confused. The consensus seems to be that there were a lot of random activity on the sun that screwed around with the nature of the ionosphere enough to totally disrupt the pathways. But things are kind of back to the good old days again. I'm telling you, this morning, the combination of decent propagation and contesting, the entire band seemed to be busy with activity. Last Sunday morning, apparently there was a big German contest. So there were a lot of guys with German call signs and German accents covering a good portion. Not quite as much as this morning, but yeah, 10 meters is alive again. You know, it's always subject to change, unfortunately, but it's doing very well right now, knock on wood.
N2VH, the mobile.
Yes, hello, Ken. How are you this fine day? I thought of you this morning. Were you on the radio at all? Were you listening to all the signals from the CQDX contest?
Yes, the band was so full that it went all the way up to the AM portion. They were all the way up towards 29.000. So we're talking all the way up 28.8. I can't even, I had to write it in the log. They were completely full. Yes, I was on a little bit of sideband listening, but it was completely full. So I went on FM. I was on FM and AM. Back to you.
Okay, very good. It was very, very, very busy. I have my band adapter. There wasn't a flat portion of it to see. And before I tuned in originally we at the 10-meter net collected 28.380, but there was a guy doing contesting on, I think it was 381. And, geez, I don't know. I guess I'm just not a contester at heart. I just kind of glaze over when I hear guys just kind of reciting a couple of numbers and a call sign, and then they say next, and then they repeat, and then they say next, and then they repeat. And, you know, after the 50th contact, you know, it all kinds of sounds like the same stuff. So we moved over to 28.37, and we had enough of a little patch of the band to operate. Occasionally, a foreign country propagation faded in, and a thickly accented, occasionally Hispanic person would be heard in the background, but I don't think they heard us, so we didn't interrupt their work, and they didn't interrupt mine. So, what can I tell you? So you ended up on the AM and the FM portion. Yeah, I can understand that. It was real hectic today. You know, it's the old adage, it's too much of a good thing. It's not good to see 10 meters kind of dead like it was all summer long, But it's always nice to have a couple of blank spaces where you can plant a net without getting interrupted by other people and interrupting other people as well.
Yes, very well said. On my pen adapter, it looked like a picket fence all the way up the band to the AM portion. I was on AM, and I couldn't believe how close they were to the AM. I could hear them on the AM pulling frequency over slightly. So we were going on 29, we went a little higher, and then on the FM, there's a lot of people on there to talk with. And on the repeater portion, stayed up there for a while, but I had a lot of running around, so I wasn't on the radio too much. But I stayed off SSB when I saw on the Saturn spectrum scope, and it was, as they call it, on ICOM spectrum scope, and it's like a picket fence. Yeah, a lot of propagation. Beautiful. 10 meters is back. 10 meters is back. And also 15 meters, same way. Very good. Very good propagation. And I wanted to say hello from Nebraska here. Out here in the Midwest, we're here in Asia at night. A lot of Asia, a lot of Australia. Japan comes in beautifully at night on 10 meters. Working very well. And in the morning, I go on at law local time, 8 a.m. I get a cup of coffee before I go to work between 7:30 and 8. And I talk to people in New Jersey and Long Island for about a half hour before I go to work every morning. So it's wonderful. And everybody's armchair coffee between 7:30 and 8. And I do my three-minute commute to work with a smile on my face. So thank you for letting me come into the net tonight. I'll hand it back to Net Control.
Very good. Well, you're always welcome here, Ken. I'm sure you know it. As you are welcome for the 10-meter net, you know, maybe next Sunday or the Sunday after that, if all things are aligned and there's a little less contact activity going on, maybe you'll check in. It'll be nice to hear from you again on the 10-meter net.
Yes, I will. Definitely. Next Sunday I'll be there. Yeah, snow. Here we got snow, so you know, weather report, ice and snow. And the streets are clear, they get right on it, sunshine, melted, radiant heat. We have single digits at night. It sounds nice and cold and frosty at night, and at daytime it's in the low 30s. And it's supposed to warm up during the week, but still have ice and snow now. That's the new thing. Ice and snow, winter is upon us out here. At least in the high plains. I heard Colorado has it too. So we have winter already. I'll hand it back to that control with that. Make it my final go around. Thank you. Send to VHC Mobile in Nebraska. Thank you.
AC2GS. Well, stay warm. You know, time flies. It goes faster and faster as we get older, I've noticed. You know, before you know it, blink a few times, it'll be November, and then just a few more blinks, and we're off to 2024. But I don't want to rush time, because you never know what the future will bring us. So be well, Ken. I look forward to talking to you again here on the technical net, on the 10-meter net. Be well. Yeah.
All right, you still taking queries, Roy?
Anyway.
All right, I finally thought of something worth talking about. You mentioned a couple things that I'm interested in. One is the fan dipole, and the other one is, generally speaking, how the solar cycle's going and what the predictions are. So, first question, I guess we can just knock this one out quickly, is what are the predictions for the solar cycle? How long can we expect to see the bands going? I.e., when do I need to get up a really nice antenna, and then we'll segue into that. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll have you know, I looked that up just about 10 hours ago. I was on the 10-meter net, and the other guy on the 10-meter net, because apparently it's all he has built, mentioned that he had heard or read or I don't know, somehow come to the conclusion that the sunspot was going to just fall apart and be terrible, and it's almost the end. So I took the time and trouble and looked it up. You can look it up different places. NASA has a page on it. I looked NOAA, the weather National Weather Agency, and their discussion is that actually the peak should have higher intensity than the initially projected one. So it's going to be better. It's going to peak in about 14 months. So, and keep in mind that it goes up a little bit faster than it goes down. The slopes are not identical. So, you know, you'll have a decent amount of activity for a bit longer on the down go. So expect it to peak in about 14 months. That the maximum is going to be higher than predicted. There are all kinds of guys with all kinds of estimations. There's a new solar model out there that suggested that the cycle would be shorter and lower intensity. I guess that the powers that be have decided that that model is not terribly good. So that's as far as what NOAA has to say on the subject.
ACTPL, very good news, Ryan. That's kind of what I was hoping for as well. There was a lot of naysayers saying we were going into some sort of extended minimum. And, wow, the predictions. And then the new predictions, and the new predictions after that. And then once we're into the minimum, then everyone will be talking about the next solar cycle. So thank you very much for the update. And that's good. So I've got plenty of time to get an antenna up. So which leads me to, you mentioned the fan dipole. And it's always intrigued me that you can feed a bunch of dipoles that run all from the same feed point and at a different frequency. Each length of wire presents a different impedance. And so the RF will travel down the one that's the closest to the 50-ohm impedance. Now, the question is, number one, how in practice does one tune such an antenna? And number two, in theory, what complex impedances are offered by the wires that are off-frequency QSO?
Okay. How do you tune a fan dipole? If you do it right, with a little bit of difficulty and it being a pain in the backside, because all of the elements couple with each other, because you can't really manage them too far apart mechanically. You usually keep them relatively close, and so you're in more than the very near field. We should have a new term for that. And so the coupling will detune everything. And if you adjust the tuning on one of the elements, invariably you have to go back to the other elements and retune them, because changing the resonance of one element will slightly detune the other elements. So assuming how much spare time you got, you should put as much as you can into tuning them for the portion of the band that you favor, especially if it's somewhere in the middle. But nevertheless, so that's sort of what you have to go through. I mean, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch. So with fan dipoles and such, the price you pay is the mildly annoying aspect of retuning all the elements, one after the other, after the other, after the other. As far as complex impedances, it really depends upon what frequency you're throwing in on what length of wire. You can get it any which way, I guess. Theoretically, you can, if there is a point where you're feeding it into one of the elements where it's a half wavelength long, the input impedance is going to be something like 3,000 ohms, you know, very much like an NFED halfway. But, you know, it's all over the place on the Smith chart.
That's kind of what I was afraid you were going to say. Okay, so let's skip the theory and say, in practice, would you start at the high frequency or the low frequency and then travel up or down, and then go back and iterate like that, number one. And that's, again, in practice, you fold over the ends and hope that you don't need to make it longer, and then eventually trim to the exact length once you kind of have things narrowed down.
WB2EAV.
Yes, Ed.
I didn't catch the name of the call, but let me ask. Do you have an HF antenna now at all?
sorry, AC2PL Jeff Pelham, Westchester County. I do have only a 20-meter dipole, and I used to have a an R7 up, but it's since come down because the kind of, well, anyway, for political reasons. Hi, go ahead.
No, the reason I'm asking is you have a way to get on the air now and you're looking to improve it, because I've had people, who've been driving themselves crazy over what antenna to put up and end up for years with absolutely nothing on the air as they argue with themselves. So I just want to make sure you run in that scenario. But speaking about a fan dipole, as a general rule, you pick the band you want it for, find out what length you want the elements, just the length, and hope for the best, because it is so mathematically complex that it's impossible to keep mathematical track of it.
Yeah, Roger. So always
comment November 2nd.
Cut it long because you can't cut it. Wait, cut it short because you can't cut it long. Cut it long because you can't cut it short. One of those things. Anyway, so leave yourself a little bit of room to truncate the ends of the antenna QSO. And are we feeding these things so that even dipole, like even ends, or is it a little bit off center to try and capitalize on the change in the impedance there? Maybe making one leg a little bit shorter.
Want to hear my personal unscientific opinion? I can give you a long mathematical analysis that proves nothing but my unscientific opinion. So all you're going to do is drive yourself crazy.
Too late for that. Back to that. Thanks, guys.
Okay, thank you, Ed. Let me try my best to answer the question. As Ed mentioned, it's much too mathematically complex to have one that's tuned correctly out of the box. Now, you could just hang whatever comes out of the box, and sometimes it'll be halfway decent, and other times you'll just have to rely on an antenna tuner. That's why if you're going to really tune it for optimum use, you're going to have to tune it in place. You put it up where you're going to use it, and then you spend the better part of a day adjusting the length. I would tend to adjust the long length first. Mechanically, it's easier to sort of do it that way. As you mentioned, I wouldn't clip anything. I would fold them over, and I'd leave them folded over. You never quite know when you're going to want to adjust it somewhere down the road. So you get to the longest one, and you work your way up to the shortest one, and then you go back to the longest one because it's guaranteed to be detuned, and you adjust that, and you go back up, and as often as you can tolerate it, until it's a reasonable resonance. I would try and keep them equal lengths. You could try something fancy, but then you're going to have the input impedance be different than 50 ohms on some and not 50 ohms and 50 ohms on others. And I think you're just kind of overcomplicating it. So I would try and keep it as a center-fed dipole of numerous different lengths. That's complicated enough as far as I'm concerned.
An alternate or radical suggestion?
Always, please.
Set it up
to
the book. Set it up there. Get a antenna tuner and just tweak as you go. And by the way, don't obsess over optimizing the SWR. As long as it's below 1.5 is golden, if you're below 2, it's okay. The main problem with high SWR is not that you don't get out, it's that the transmitter overheats. So, you know, don't confuse oranges and apples. But you have to have a pretty bad SWR before it actually affects the way you're heard on the other end.
Okay, thank you, Ed. Again, your mileage might vary. I happen to have a very nice expert system, SPE 1.3K, that will wreak havoc if I supply it with anything past a 1.5:1 viswap. So, you know, it sort of depends what you're dealing with. On my linear amplifier, there's no alarm off switch as far as I'm aware.
I'm assuming 100 watt rate.
Okay, I think I doubled with someone in the good old days. I would be able to hear. the person that doubles with me, but now I can't even hear myself, so I can't hear the doublers. I got to contact good old Lou and have him kick the All-Star box a couple of times and get it to work straight. If anyone else was talking while I was talking, feel free to repeat yourself so I know what you said.
It was me. Should I try again?
Please, if you will.